Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 46 for June 28th, 2006. It's time for another chapter of the Whiskey Cast Book Club.
How could the Scots, a disagreeable people cringing under the tyranny of the pulpit, ever have come to think of this liberating and audacious drink? The gifts of Scotland to the world are strange indeed if they come from a people serious to the point of gloom. What are they? Whiskey, golf, porridge, haggis, the kilt, the bagpipes, music hall comedians, public house jokes. A curious list of products for a staid and sober people.
That's Ian Buxton channeling the spirit of the author Ennius MacDonald, who wrote those words in his groundbreaking 1930 book, Whiskey. The book is being republished with an introduction from Ian, who also uncovered the mystery behind Ennius MacDonald. There's more to the story in just a few minutes. First, though, let's look at the news. Morrison Bowmore is releasing several new limited edition single malts, including a 37-year-old Bowmore. Only 708 bottles of this rare Islay malt will be available. There's also a new 16-year-old Bowmore limited edition. This one was produced from just 39 Oloroso sherry casks and was distilled in 1990. Finally, there's a new release of 18-year-old Auchentoshan, also aged in first and second fill Oloroso sherry butts. 4,800 bottles of this malt will be available. The Scotch Whiskey Association is putting some teeth into its new code of marketing practices for SWA member distilleries. The code calls for an independent panel to review complaints and has the power to fine distilleries who violate the policy. In many ways, it's similar to the UK's press review panel. White & Mackay's redesign of its whiskey portfolio continues. Now the flagship White & Mackay blends are being repackaged, and the current 12, 18, and 21-year-old expressions will be replaced with 13, 19, and 22-year-old bottlings. White & Mackay has already redesigned the packaging for its Isle of Jura single malt, and the Dalmore will also get a facelift by year's end. Tickets are on sale now for the Whiskey Fringe Festival in Edinburgh. It's scheduled for August 12th and 13th as one of the events surrounding the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. The tickets are available through Royal Mile Whiskies in Edinburgh. Also, tickets are now on sale for Whiskey Live in Glasgow, September 8th and 9th. And the calendar of events for the Kentucky Bourbon Festival has been released. It is scheduled for September 13th through the 17th in Bardstown. You'll find links for all three events at the WhiskeyCast website. It's not hard to find great books about whiskey these days, but the first one of its kind is still one of the best. Back in 1930, an unknown Scot going by the name of Ennius MacDonald published a book titled simply Whiskey. MacDonald never wrote another word, and his real identity was a source of speculation and pub discussions for decades. Now Canongate Books in Edinburgh has re-released a new edition of Whiskey with a foreword by Charles MacLean and an introduction by Ian Buxton, who painstakingly solved the mystery of Ennius MacDonald.
I had to do some detective work because I figured out that the author's name, Ennius MacDonald, had to have been a pseudonym. Nobody knew who the guy was. Nobody knew why he hadn't published again. So that took a lot of tracking down. But we eventually found an obscure academic monograph on the Porpoise Press, which was the publishers in Edinburgh in the 1930s, who were Scottish literary publishers. And from that, I was able to track down that George Malcolm Thompson had a hand in this. And with a lot of difficulty, I then found his daughter, who's still alive and well and living in England, and she was thrilled and delighted to grant us copyright to reproduce the book.
And what can you tell us about George Thompson?
Well, George Thompson was a remarkable man. He was born in 1899. He just missed military service at the end of the First World War, which, of course, was a slaughterhouse, so he was spared that. Luckily, he went to the war just at the very end. He came back. He read English literature at Edinburgh University, studying under Professor Saintsbury, who, of course, wrote Notes from a Cellar Book, a great wine and whiskey book from the 20s. He went on to found the Porpoise Press, which was a bedrock of Scottish literary publishing in the 20s and 30s. And in 1930, he went down to London to work for Lord Beaverbrook as a journalist. He had a very distinguished career in journalism. He had a distinguished war career as well, doing largely secret work in the Ministry of Aviation. After the war, he returned to journalism. He retired in his 60s. He then wrote a considerable number of books. He wrote about 20 books and lived on till 1996 when he died in London. So he was 97 years old, a passionate Scotsman and a Scots nationalist all his life, and a man with a distinguished career both in journalism and writing and in his war service.
Now the key question. Why did he take a pen name for this book?
Well, that's a remarkable story. Of course, in 1930, the climate in Scotland, in terms of people's views of whiskey, were very different. Whiskey wasn't quite respectable. It certainly wasn't as fashionable as it is today. And Thompson's parents were ardent teetotalers. His mother, in fact, felt very strongly on the subject. So in order to spare the shame to the family name, Thompson adopted the name Aeneas MacDonald, which, of course, is the name of a great Scottish patriot.
And after his parents died, why did he never come back and claim responsibility for the book?
I don't know. I haven't been able to figure that out. I've been able to look at some of his correspondence and to talk to his daughter. And it's clear that in the early 50s, there was talk of a new edition. He was obviously very busy with his journalism and his other writing at that time, and he declined that offer on the grounds that the book then needed too extensive a revision. But it's not clear why he never revisited it later.
Now, we talk about the need for a revision back in the 1950s, but in reality, this book still rings very true today in a lot of ways, correct?
Well, I think it's an absolutely timeless book, Mark. In fact, you might have needed to revise it in the 50s. Today, you first approach it for its period charm to see what it tells us about the world of whiskey some 75 years ago when whiskey was having a very, very difficult time, in fact, probably in unparalleled crisis. But in fact, his comments on blending, his comments on the industry, his tips for drinking whiskey, his recommendations for great whiskies to drink, what he tells us about it means to be Scottish, why whiskey is important. In all those ways, he speaks to us today. And he's controversial, he's outspoken, and he's very sassy in his writing.
Give us an example.
Well, what is he to say that's still relevant to us today? I'm just going to pull one quote at random from his final chapter, Judging, Purchase, and Care. He says, there seems, in fact, to be something rather like a conspiracy of silence among the proprietors of the different brands of whiskey, a conspiracy to prevent the consumer from knowing what he's drinking. Each label on a whiskey bottle ought to bear the names of the malt whiskies in the blend and the exact percentage of grain spirit contained in it. In addition, it should state the number of years and months that the blend and each of its constituents has matured in cask. This will seem a somewhat drastic proposal, but sound whiskies would only gain by it. And, you know, 75 years later, we still don't have that information, and he's still right.
It's interesting to go back and look at some of the commentary on the Times back then, because this was written really right after the whiskey scandals of the pre-World War I era, correct?
It was a desperate time for Scotch whiskey. There had been a huge boom in the 1890s, but that petered out, as you rightly say, with scandals in the late 1890s, early 1900s. And that was followed by depression, and that was followed by the Great War, and that was followed by a really deep depression in Europe particularly, and I know the States suffered as well. And then, on top of it all, came Prohibition. So Scotch whiskey in particular went through a torrid time from 1900 to 1930, with around 50 distilleries closing their doors for good. It was a remarkable time to publish this book.
And it should be noted that it's not all serious. There's a lot of fun in this book, too, correct?
There's a huge amount of fun in this book. There's a lot of good humor. Let me see if I can find you what he says about the Scots, because he's quite rude about some of his countrymen. How could the Scots, a disagreeable people, cringing under the tyranny of the pulpit, ever have come to think of this liberating and audacious drink? The gifts of Scotland to the world are strange indeed if they come from a people serious to the point of gloom. What are they? Whiskey, golf, porridge, haggis, the kilt, The Bagpipes, Music Hall Comedians, Public House Jokes. A curious list of products for a staid and sober people. So he wasn't above poking fun at his fellow countrymen.
And he really is one of the leading lights at that period of Scottish literature, correct?
That's right. The house, the publishing house that he founded with a colleague, the Porpoise Press, was publishing Neil Gunn, Hugh McDermott, and a number of other important Scottish literary writers, and it was a mainstay for Scottish literary life between the wars. Now seen as hugely important, and as a result, the early Porpoise Press editions are keenly collected.
Anything else you can add I didn't ask about?
The book, of course, then was published in 1934 with at the end of Prohibition in America. And so if you're lucky, you may be able to find a copy of the original American edition. Both that and the first UK edition are desperately rare now. So we think it's marvelous for whiskey drinkers, whiskey enthusiasts. We get to this book really the first time anyone wrote about whiskey from the point of view of the consumer, and that's what makes it so important.
The book is available worldwide through Amazon.com's UK site, and I think it should have a place of honor in any whiskey lover's library. That's all for this edition of Whiskey Cast. Next time around, we'll try to solve another mystery. For years, it's been written that there are just 32 primary aromas that the nose can detect. Where did this idea come from? I'll have the answer on the next episode of Whiskey Cast. By the way, if you have comments or suggestions, I'd love to hear from you. My email address is comments@whiskeycast.com. If you like what you hear, please consider leaving comments at the Whiskey Cast page in the iTunes Music Store or your favorite podcast site. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2006, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.